1 week ago, Wisconsin was on the bubble, as said by us. Then came Illinois, statement made. Then came Michigan State, message sent. And just like that, everything changed. The Badgers didn't just win, they flipped their entire season. A dream week gives way to new expectations. I'm Rajiv, he's Justin. Here we go.
Welcome to the Bucky Report, your destination for all things Wisconsin Badgers. Authentic takes.
Oh my God.
Game analysis.
Touchdown Badgers! Ring one up!
And discussion from the fan perspective.
Woohoo!
Thanks for joining us and on Wisconsin.
Welcome to the Bucky Report. We are your hosts, Rajiv and Justin, back together on a Sunday evening to talk about all things Wisconsin Badgers. On today's show, we break down the dream week that may have completely changed Wisconsin's season. Two massive wins over Illinois and Michigan State. Just a week ago, this felt like a bubble team. Now, the tournament feels secure, and the real debate is how high Wisconsin can climb on the seed line heading into March. With spring football approaching, we'll also break down the five offensive players we're most excited to watch, the names that could shape Wisconsin's offense in 2026. Lastly, wide receivers coach Jordan Reed is off to the NFL. We'll talk about the impact of his departure on the receiver room, recruiting, and the offense moving forward. You can find our show on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast. If you like what we're doing, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. Just a quick shameless marketing. Thank you to all for doing that. If you can't hit that like button, it really helps the show. Comment on the show. All that stuff is really helpful for the YouTube algorithm, the unknown YouTube algorithm that no one actually understands. But thank you for your help with that and supporting the show. Justin, man, how you doing? Are you still on cloud nine like I am? Because I am. Like I'm loving this basketball team right now.
I would be if my cold would go away.
You're sick.
But it made for a Friday night where I felt miserable. It made me feel a good bit better. I was debating getting on the show with Ryan for that. And I'm like, should I say something? And he didn't send me an invite. And I'm like, I'm not saying anything if he didn't send me one. I'm like, I'm better off just resting. I'm like,
it was a fun one. It was a fun one. And you know, the Badgers are playing well when our good friend Kevin Brown actually has something nice to say about this team. No, not nice. He says a lot of nice things about the team. But I shouldn't say that. He's a very critical Badger fan, and he's critical of Greg Gard, which is fair. Very fair, Kevin. I'm not trying to dog
him. He makes them earn their praise.
That's right. He says, they finally have me believing they can finally make a run. I mean, it's a fair point. Before we get into basketball, so we are going to talk about basketball. We're going to talk about spring football a little bit, and of course, Jordan Reed a little bit at the end of the show. Are you into the Olympics, man? I'm so into the Olympics. What's your stance on
it? I haven't been, but the sports just starting now that are the big ones, like men's ice hockey, women's ice hockey's been going on for a little bit. So that's really the one that I'm kind of curious if the men's American team can make a run finally. Have we gotten the gold in our?
I don't know, but we are in our lifetime round. We're the two seed in the sort of the knockout stage, and Canada is of course the one seed.
Yeah.
I love the Olympics. I absolutely love them. I'm obsessed with them. And I'll tell you what, if you have Peacock and if you watch Badger games on Peacock, then you likely have Peacock. It's pretty great. You can actually go to the Olympic like channel and then pick the sport you want to watch. And then within that you can like, yeah. I want to watch the finals of men's downhill. I want to watch the slope style, whatever. It's great. Like you can just sit down and watch whatever you want. It's awesome. The curling's been crazy. Canadians, they're absolute cheaters. I don't know what are you touching the rock for in front of the hog line. I don't know what you're doing there, buddy. But yeah, very, very fun. I'm a huge Olympic. I'm an Olympic nut. I watch it all day at work, have it on my TV in my office, watching it on YouTube TV, everything like that. Yeah. Tyler says lots of dramatics in the Olympics, cheating in both curling and skiing long jump. I don't know about the cheating in skiing long jump, Tyler. You have to fill me in on that a little bit. That seems interesting. How do you do that? How do you cheat in that?
Yeah, I have no idea. They're I don't know. They're using the stuff that Clark Griswold put on the saucer to gain extra speed.
All the way down. That's great.
The food polymer or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. All right, man. So this basketball team is absolutely flying. Absolutely flying. Two top 10 wins in the span of 5 days. Definitely going to be ranked in the top 25 tomorrow, just because you can't have two top 10 wins and not get up there. Brings our quad one total up to three quad one wins with another two consecutive on the bounce here with Ohio State and Iowa. At Oregon is not that. At Washington is another quad one opportunity because top 75 net rankings on the road is quad one, top 30 at home. So absolutely massive for the week. You weren't on the reaction show with us for Michigan State. Tell me, let's go back and start with Illinois. That road game was absolutely wild. And to think that we actually got it done at Illinois is crazy to me. We shot really well. Overtime game, we brought it, they really didn't in overtime. What are your thoughts on that massive win?
That was one of those games where they showed a ton of grit in that game to be able to get it done. We struggled to rebound in that game, and we had a fair amount of offensive rebounds, but like when we really needed to get a hold of the basketball at times, their length really caused us some problems. I was really impressed, and maybe this is the sign of things to come because we just played two really good teams and shot the heck out of the ball when we needed to from three. And if we can keep doing that, and maybe we finally turn the corner as a team, because I think we felt coming into this season that we were a better three-point shooting team than what we've been doing this season. It feels like we've been getting better as the season's been going on. Like we were around 30% for the first third of the season. The second third year, we're like at 33. And now it feels like we're getting in that 35, 36% range. And if this team can shoot in that range on the volume that they're shooting, I think it puts them in a pretty good spot for the tournament. Especially if they can get hot, because as we saw against Michigan State, when this team starts hitting threes consistently, like at a high rate, they are extremely hard to stay with. And we talked about that early in the season. Like when this team gets rolling, they're like an avalanche. They just get on top of you and suddenly you're down 15, 20 points. And it's like, what the heck just happened?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that instantly changed for that game is, we didn't go down into a 17-4 hole or some nonsense, which we had done time and time again. We didn't do that. We actually pounded the ball inside a little bit. Our first play on the offensive side was pick and roll, a clean pick and roll. How about that? Nolan Winter from Nick Boyd. Amazing. Amazing. Shot in 1999, says Rajiv. So we need fast starts. We absolutely did need fast starts. And that's exactly what happened. I like how Greg Gard made some adjustments and instantly corrected the things. And frankly, he's done that all season, right? Every time we've had an issue, he's found a way to make things better. Like I think his coaching, especially in the last week, but honestly, this season has been pretty damn good. We lost Kirk Penny. We didn't really know what was going on. Offensively, there was no cohesion early in the season. And then all of a sudden, it's kind of beginning to work. As you said, they're beginning to play their best basketball. I did a show earlier this week on the podcast only where I talked about how I feel like they're peaking at the right time. And what else do you want to peak? Yeah, we want to peak in March, but like this is when we can build that momentum.
That's my only concern is I want them to peak, but I'm worried that it will like we're gonna hit it and then hit the Big Ten tournament and then fade right after, and that would be like that's like the worst thing. Now, what I will say, it seems like we're putting ourselves into a good spot, unlike the last few seasons where it felt like we kind of tailed off heading into the end of the season. We seem to be playing our best basketball right now, which for this team, that's important because it shows number one, I think some of the depth, like I know we don't love some of the, I don't love this roster construction. I think there are some legitimate weaknesses in it. The number of guards we have is a part of it because I wish we had an extra ball handler that we felt really strongly about just because if somebody gets in foul trouble in either of these tournaments, I think we'd feel really uncomfortable with basically only having one guy. But for the most part, I think the guys who needed to play hard have played really hard and have gotten better as the season's gone on.
Yeah, no doubt. And honestly, man, winning at Illinois, that is no easy task. Oh, it's unbelievable to get that kind of performance on the road. Boyd and Blackwell, they're just doing their thing, man. And then you get to the MSU game and wow. I cannot remember a single time that we owned Tom Izzo as much as we owned them in this game. Like, I mean, we all Badger fans were waiting for that shoe to drop and waiting for like, oh, they're going to go on some crazy run. They did two, three threes in a row in the first half, cut it, got nine straight points, cut it to maybe seven or something like that. And literally from that point on, it just wasn't a game. The entire second half, I was like, when is this crazy Michigan State run going to happen? And no matter what they did, we just went down and scored. They did still get a lot of good shots up, but I mean, Nick Boyd was just owning everything, and there was just so much ball movement. There was so much heady plays. There was good screens. There was good passing, like low turnovers again. It's just, it's really, it's scary to think how good this team can be when all these things are clicking on, you know, like it, every, all we're hitting on all cylinders. The scary part comes when you look ahead to Oregon, Washington, Maryland. You're like, oh, are we going to lose one of those three? Are we going to lose at Ohio State next this week? Like, we're just so close to being able to really kick it up. And we've done that. Like, you beat Illinois, Michigan State, and Michigan, like the three best teams in the conference, except Purdue. We haven't beat Purdue yet. We will get another shot at them at the end of the season. I mean, that's, it's remarkable. That Michigan State game was an absolute, that might be one of the best games I've ever seen Badgers play.
If Boyd and Blackwell are playing that aggressive, there's not going to be many teams that we don't beat. Because I felt like they came out and they shoved it in Michigan State's face in that game. And they looked like, like, we've had games where Michigan State's come out and just gotten on us, and it's like the level of athletes we struggle with. This felt like a game where Boyd just came out there and was like, nope, I'm just coming at you, and I'm just going to put it to you in this game. And they absolutely, like, I have not seen us since maybe, like, man, even Devin Harris didn't have a game where we were this dominant against Izzo. But where we had athletically looked like we had no problem with them. Michigan State normally makes us uncomfortable, and that's a big part of why the games play out as tight as they do. Even if we're more skilled, they're always more athletic. This game, I felt like a couple of their bigs are probably a little bit more skilled and refined. And other than that, I felt like we were every bit as good as them, other than Carr, who's just a freak in nature as an athlete. Like, I remember him going up for a rebound and was just like, he's a foot higher than everybody else on the court.
Yeah, I mean, it is, it's pretty surreal to even think that that even happened. I mean, you're right. Like, they're just, there's a lot of guys on that team that are good. And for us to just dominate like that, it makes you wonder, can they continue this streak? Like, if they can beat at Illinois and Michigan State at home, there's no reason they can't win at Ohio State. There's no reason they can't win against home against Iowa. Go out west and win both of those. Like, there is a path to just continuing this run of games, but we also know that's just not how it goes, man. Like, we were going to lose one of these games that we shouldn't, because that's basketball. This is the Big Ten. I mean, look at the Michigan. Michigan played at Northwestern this week and struggled the entire game. They came out on top. They won. But that's, I mean, that's Northwestern. They're 78th or 9th in the net. Like, it's very, very difficult to win. And Ohio State is in the 40s in the net. They are, that's a quad, big, big quad one victory if we can get that done there at their place, because it's on the road. It wasn't a quad one at home. I mean, that's going to be a very difficult game. But I do think that you can just all of a sudden, like, literally a week ago, we were sitting in these chairs saying, I think we're going to be on the bubble here. I don't know that we can get this done. Look what happens in a week. It's just, what the hell happened to this team? Like, do you think this is all sustainable? Are you comfortable with this now? Or are you still a little bit sketchy?
I think we've always felt like this team, when they stay locked in mentally, that they are really, they're a problem to deal with. The effort level and just playing smart, good mental basketball and staying focused has been something they've struggled with a lot of this season. And they have gotten better, to their credit, as the season's gone on. If they can stay consistent with that, there's no reason they can't win these games. I felt Indiana, like, I think we all felt like we beat Indiana. I think we felt like the refereeing at the end of that game was pretty piss poor. I think that one got stolen from us. And I do think that if we had that win under our belt right now, we'd be looking at this, and number one, we'd be a top four seed right now in the Big Ten with a double bye. And somebody asked that question also in here. They asked if we felt like we were going to get that. They're going to have to win out. Like, it's going to be really hard to get into the double bye. Somebody's got to falter, because all the teams that are ahead of us are every bit as good as we are.
I mean, I don't really care if we, I mean, I want to finish in the top four of the Big Ten because that, I don't really care about the double bye, but that's fine. Like,
I like
the tournament doesn't really do it for me.
I hate the way the Big Ten tournament sets up heading into the NCAA tournament because of the lack of rest you get. And I would prefer to have as much time for them to get their legs back under them. So if they played one less game, that to me is a perk.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. Like, listen, I'm not going to say no. Like, of course I want them to get that, but I also am like, the more important thing is we're three games back from the conference title, which we're not catching Michigan because Michigan's not losing three more games, period. They're not losing three more games. And then you're right. There's a lot of teams on top of that. Like Illinois still up there with, I think, two or three losses. And of course, Purdue's up there and so on and so forth. But we need to keep ourselves in that upper echelon. If you look at the Big Ten standings, you got those ranked teams up there. We're in that lot now because we got to get ranked, but we need to stay up there. I don't want to see us drop Ohio State, Iowa at home, or Washington or something like that. Like, we need to keep this going because this is where the seeding discussion can really happen. We got a comment here earlier from Will Hanna. Bracket breaking week, as long as they don't sink the next few weeks. Ceiling of four, floor of nine. Bill Woj, can they get a five seed? What are your thoughts on seeding based on this week?
I think that that's a bit of a reach unless we have a really good Big Ten tournament. Like, if we wanted to get a four seed, I think we'd have to win the Big Ten. Like, we'd have not win the Big Ten, but win the Big Ten tournament in order to do that, because we would need another big win or two yet on our resume, I think, in order for us to do it, because we have three really nice wins now, but we also have a lot of meh that's kind of sitting in there in our wins, where they're going to look at it and be like, yeah, they did what they should do to these teams, and they don't have any terrible losses, but against the quad ones and stuff like that, we're still under 500 on the quad ones, which if we were something like 5-3, you probably could be pushing a four seed, I think. But us being like, I think we're 3-5 right now.
That's, I think so, yeah.
That's not going to be good enough, because there's going to be teams that have a winning record in their quad one.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the next few weeks matters a ton, obviously, and how this plays out. Our net ranking right now is 34. Okay. So if you want to get into that upper echelon, like, to give you some perspective, Iowa and Indiana, who are both below us in the Big Ten standings, are higher than us in the net rankings. The NCAA net ranking, whatever it is, that formula sees those as better teams because they have a couple more wins. They've done better.
Go ahead. Do you think that's because of those couple of big blowout losses we had earlier, that those are being weighed heavy?
I don't think so. I think, as you said, our record against quad one wins is like 3-5 or something like that. And I'm going to look it up right now. I have it already. I pulled up, but I didn't. All right. So here is where, so the Big Ten, what did I do? There we go. So the Big Ten, obviously the top ones are Michigan, Purdue, Illinois, Nebraska's 11, Michigan State 15, Iowa 27, Indiana 31, Wisconsin 33. We are 3-6 against quad one teams. Now Iowa's 2-5, Indiana's 2-7. The reality is, like, I don't understand all the stuff that goes in behind this stuff, but if we beat Iowa, and we're going to have Iowa at home, we beat Iowa, we're going to surpass them. Indiana did beat us, although albeit at home. So, like, we can get up there. I think there is a chance, Justin, for a five. I agree with you on a four, but, like, we do play Purdue still. If we can beat Purdue on the road, yeah, we'll get up there, because by then we'll be the top two or three in the conference. Yeah. The Big Ten tournament, I don't think has that much of a bearing on the dance too much. I'm also one of those guys where, like, if we lose and we can rest, I'm okay with it, because that tournament doesn't mean anything. The one week after means everything. So I'm okay with it. I think we're most likely at a 5 or 6 if things progress the way they're going to go, which means we're going to lose one of these games that we're not thinking we're going to lose. Probably finish the year 13-7, 14-6 in conference. Maybe we lose two more conference games. If that happens, it's 14-6. That's a great conference record. That's about a 5 or 6 seed for us. So because we've obviously got really good quad one victories now.
Yeah. The net rating is killing us right now because our defensive analytics suck.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Even on Torvik, when I looked at it, we were over 100. Which is, 100 is considered the average line for defense. Like, if you want to be sub 100, if you want to be considered above average for a defensive team. And we have been in that range a few times, but for the most part, we have this habit where we seem to have games where we just let up. I guess that could change a little bit if they go on a run here in the defense. If they stay as focused as they were against Michigan State, then yeah, that number is going to drop dramatically probably over the last few weeks here. And maybe they get sub, you know, 100, get into that 99 flat range or even a high 98, which would really significantly move them.
Yeah. Yeah. Honcho asks, are they ranked tomorrow? Should have last week if they would want to Bloomington. Yeah. They definitely are going to be ranked tomorrow. You beat two top 10 teams this week. You are definitely going to get ranked. I see no way.
And you lost your last game by, what was it, two to Indiana or one? I can't even
remember. Yeah, I mean, like, we easily could have won that game, and we would have been sniffing around there. And because we lost that game, we weren't getting votes. And listen, the rankings are just rankings at the end of the day. We're 33rd in the net. That's the more important ranking. However, KenPom, I think we're 32. But yeah, like at the end of the day, we're going to be ranked, which is good. It helps confidence. It helps excitement, which is nice. Justin, other than the fact that we're shooting the ball well, which is a thing, of course, what do you think is the biggest reason that we've just knocked off two of the best teams in the conference and arguably two of the best teams in the country this week? Like, what's the biggest change?
I would have to take a look at it. I believe both games we were exceptional on the offensive boards.
We were.
Which is a big deal. I don't think we've been incredible overall as a rebounding team. Those are two good rebounding teams in Michigan State and Illinois. But for what we needed to do against them, I felt like we did that at a high level. Like, they're never going to be – neither one of those teams are going to be teams that we're going to go out and dominate on the boards. We're just not. We don't have guys that are just, like, physical brutes on the boards. And that's what's going to be required in order to take over those two. But outside of that, I thought they passed the ball well. They really kept the turnovers in check. Mm-hmm. There was not a lot of stupid, you know, boneheaded plays in either one of those games. And that was a huge deal. Like, this team played disciplined. And I think that's something that, and for the most part, they understood the moment. Like, you didn't get a lot of these possessions where they came down and they needed a good shot, where they did something stupid or jacked up a bad shot. Now, they still happen at times. They're not perfect. And a part of it is because of the style of play they play. But for the most part, they've done a good job of getting good offensive looks time and time again, which really tends to feed into consistency.
It helps that obviously they're making the shots and they're doing all those things. And like, so for me, points in the paint, you mentioned turnovers, that's huge. Points in the paint, which comes from a lot of different avenues, right? It comes from forcing the ball down there in the post a little more early in games. It comes from a lot of dribble drives. It comes from offensive rebounds, like in putbacks. There's been a lot of activity and scoring in the paint. The other thing I'm going to just say is a name, and that's Austin Rapp. I think Austin Rapp has just decided, you know, listen, on this show included, we kind of got a lot of shit for the fact that he wasn't really playing that well.
Too, which was part.
And then all of a sudden, the dude comes out and went right in front of our eyes against Ohio State. We're sitting there just draining threes left and right. He gets ill. He has to miss a game. Comes back. It's like he literally is a new player. That Ohio State game to now, he's a new player. Like, it's like we signed a new guy in the transfer portal midseason. That's what it looks like when you have Austin Rapp now. So you couple that with another big, obviously Winter playing really well, getting his double-doubles every night. Boyd and Blackwell now really being talked about as one of the best backcourts in America. It was already the Big Ten. Now everyone nationally is talking about how good this backcourt is together. You have a streaky shooter in Braden Carrington, who does really well. I mean, there's just a lot of good pieces here. And that points in the paint, turnovers, and Austin Rapp. Those are the things that I'm like, there's no reason those can't continue either. Like, we're going to have games where we turn the ball over. That's fine. But this is a recipe for success. And I think part of that, the drop in turnovers comes from what I've talked about before, which is the cohesion between Boyd and Blackwell, right? They're looking like they're more comfortable with each other. The team simply just knows each other. They're playing better. All that. You can improve your rebounding numbers. You can improve your turnover numbers with all that. It's really impressive just to see how this goes. There was a comment I wanted to put up from our good boy, Rob Sorensen. Where's the believe meter at tonight? Let me tell you where the believe meter is at tonight. I absolutely think the ceiling or the Final Four for this team, which I know people think is crazy. It's not, because we just beat Michigan, Illinois, Michigan State. There is no team in America, maybe Arizona, that we cannot beat. Because I think Michigan's the best team in the country. So we can beat all the teams, and we beat them at their own place. So yeah, getting by the round of 32 is going to be difficult, because we're going to run into a buzzsaw team like we have the last few years that just is going to shoot the ball well, and we're going to struggle. But we have the shooters, and now, Justin, now we're finding ways to score when we're not shooting the ball well. We're playing better team basketball. We're playing better defensively, more effort defensively. The Final Four is the ceiling for this team, and people think I'm crazy. That's fine, but tell me that they can't beat any team in the country, because you're wrong if that's what you say.
Well, I was just going to say that specific thing. The bigger question is can they do it multiple times in a row? Now, beating Illinois and Michigan State proves that they can do it a couple times in a row. Can they do that consistently? We will find out. I mean, that was the hallmark of that 2015 team. They had a gauntlet that they went through to get to the Final Four, and they absolutely could raise their game and just play with anybody. We have not seen this team shoot objectively awful more than like once or twice this entire season. That is probably the biggest difference between what we've seen from this team and some of the past teams that we've watched heading into the tournament, is we don't feel like there's going to be a game where we lay an egg and go 3 for 30 from three. Like our poor 3-point shooting games have still been objectively lukewarm. Like they're 25% or 20%. And it's like, yeah, they didn't shoot great from three, but it wasn't 10%. So I think the floor for this team in terms of shooting isn't poor. As long as Boyd and Blackwell are being aggressive, I think it bodes really well. There's not going to be a team that we really run into that has a dominant center type this season, unless they get to somebody in like the Final Four or in like the Elite Eight, where you're facing a top tier team, unless we get seeded really poorly. So we'd have to be like an 8 or 9 and, you know, get a 1 seed in the second round.
I mean, we have faced teams like that. We've beaten them. Illinois and Michigan both have dominant big men, and we were able to stop them. And it's just really,
I mean, more like the physical side. I mean, Michigan does have a pretty good skilled big, but he's not a guy that I think can go down there and just kind of abuse you in the post. He's skilled, but he's not a guy who's going to just out-muscle you into the point. Like, we haven't had to deal with that this season yet in terms of some of our other Badger teams have, but I don't know if there's a team out there that really has a guy like that this year. Yeah. You look at it and you're like, this guy's a problem. You know, the Big Ten is normally the conference that has that guy.
Tyler says, Rajiv's my guy, but he's drinking the juice heavy tonight. We haven't made a Sweet 16 in a decade. Let's start with baby steps before we start throwing out Final Four talk. Here's what I will say. I am not saying this is going to be a Final Four team. I do. If you ask me right now, are we going to the Final Four? No, we're not going to the Final Four because we're too inconsistent. However, we have the ceiling of Final Four. Last year, I don't think our ceiling was Final Four. Like, we have the ability to beat any team in the country, and we've proven that. That's actually a fact now. It's not a debatable topic. We've beaten Michigan and Illinois on the road. Two teams that are absolutely vying for the Final Four, 100%. So, yes, I understand that means we have to get by the early tough games, and then we do, and I'm not saying we're going to. Like, if you ask me right now, my prediction, it's we're going to make it to the Sweet 16, and that's where we're going to stop. Mm-hmm. But I do think we have the possibility. Winning gambling, Rajiv drinking the Kool-Aid like Andre the Giant used to drink wine. I respect all opinions. I just don't feel like getting a Final Four is out of the question when you can score 92 points against three of the best teams in the country. You just drop 90 against all three of them. That matters. That's not nothing. We don't normally do that. So this is something different than what we've normally done, right?
Do you still have the concerns that we're going to run into a team that's going to be able to get really physical with us on the perimeter? I don't know that I worry about that with Boyd. Because I think if you want to try to get that physical with him, I think his quickness is going to be like, you're running the risk that he just blows by you if you try to get up in his face that much.
My issue is, like, I had that concern, and to an extent I still do, because that's what teams like Minnesota did that against us when they played us at home, and they had that awful first half. Ohio State did that to us a little bit in that game. Indiana did. Like, they really, really pressured the perimeter, which flustered us. My biggest issue in those games were that we could have coached a little better, and I think Greygard's done that. And Illinois tried to do the same thing, but they couldn't do it because we ran better pick and rolls, we made better passes, we made quicker decisions, and we forced the ball down low, and we rebounded and put up offensive rebounds. Like, that all that plays into the fact that if you do get pressure like that, we can do that. I am confident in Boyd's ability to break that press down a little bit and to that ball pressure that he gets. And the more, another thing is that's where Austin Rapp comes into play. The more confidence he has, that's one more guy on the court that can shoot the ball, that because they can, you can't cover everybody out there because we're just going to put the ball in the paint with the guards. Like Boyd can do that. The reason that Boyd gets blocked a lot, yes, they go to his left, but they're obviously collapsing the lane. We haven't been able to have the 4 and 5 out there shooting other than Winter. Biliauskas has been out there wide open. If he makes some threes, wraps him wide open. If he makes some threes, that's how you can combat that a little bit. I am still worried about it, though. I'm still worried about it for sure. I'm worried that game where we have 10 first half turnovers and we shoot 15% from three, that's coming. The question is, do we have any shot we can win that game?
Kevin Brown, if Boyd gets shut down, then we'll stall. What I will say is that Boyd is not going to get shut down. Athletically, he is going to be able to do most of what he wants. Now, what teams can do is they can take away getting to the rim from him and let him just shoot, which I think that's where you potentially run the risk of him stalling. If he's not hitting shots from the outside and he settles, that's going to be a problem. He's got to find ways to work around it to still be productive offensively without settling if teams start to play off of him. And the fact that he's shooting really well, like he's on an absolute heater from the outside right now. Teams aren't going to be able to do that if he continues to shoot like this. Like he went from being like a 30% three-point shooter. I think he's shooting like 36 now. Yeah. So if he continues to stay hot, you have to play up on him. And if you're going to play up on him, he's going to go by you.
Yeah. Jagavi says BYU pushed the Badgers around. Yes. I think if that game was played now, it'd be different. Yeah. I was at that game. It was rough. Believe me, Kevin Brown and I are both that game. That was rough. Tyler Strieber, good comment tonight. And Illinois was missing two guys and only played six. Win is a win, but let's have some context to that one as well. At full strength, I'm not sure we squeaked that one out. Here's what I will say to that, Tyler. First of all, we were down 12 in the second half against that team. How many times, I don't care if they played five guys, how many times is a Badger team down 12 in the second half on the road to a top five team win that game? They don't. They just don't. That's the difference because I think this team is wired a little bit differently. Also, we lost and they'll run the road to Indiana without Austin Rapp, but nobody counts that. Like you just got to get past that. If they played six guys, I talked to the guy. I mean, I was just watching the show of our good friend Sonny Verma over at Locked On Illini, and he talked about how like he had no concept of why they played six. That's a Brad Underwood problem. Like they shouldn't have played six. They have more guys on their bench. We just beat them and they didn't know what to do because we flustered them. So I understand the context of the Illinois win and that's fine, but it's a home game for them. Like you should be able to overcome some of those issues when you're playing at home.
Yeah. The big things that I'll say on that are number one. Yeah. That guy's out. Wagler also went off in the game. Like he had 36 or whatever against us. Not to mention the fact that honestly, like we talked about this in our group chat. There's a difference in the rosters. Like there was a talent differential in that game in every spot except for point guard and shooting guard. Like Illinois had the better roster. They got outplayed. That's why they lost the game. Would I still take their roster over ours? Yes, I still would take their roster over ours because from a talent from 1 to 10, that roster is a better roster construction than what we have. It's just deeper. It's got more size. It's more skilled scoring going throughout that roster. But the reality is we got it done. We have two guys that are more experienced in Blackwell and Boyd than what they really have. And that plays a big factor. Now I'm not going to, you know, take away from that win. Like, I just think that's doing a disservice to the guys and what they accomplished in that game. I mean, do we look at the Michigan State game and say, well, you know, we just got hot in that game, so it doesn't matter? Because I felt like we just outplayed them. And I actually felt like in that game, we were the more talented team for a lot of it because, and that may be just simply shot making in that game, but they really struggled. They really seemed uncomfortable and they started to press once we got up big on them. They were rushed.
Yeah. We will see what happens with this team. at Ohio State on Tuesday. Going to be a very difficult game. Again, quad one victory. That'd be great to have three consecutive quad one victories. Holy cow. Listen, if we come on here next week, we play Iowa, I think, before we come on the next show next week, I think. I believe that game is on Saturday, the Iowa game. And let me just check that. It is on Sunday at 1 o'clock. So if we go 2-0 and we have beaten Ohio State and Iowa on this show next week, the Final Four talk's going to increase from me. I'm just telling you, be prepared for that. Be prepared.
Listen, I'll maybe start leaning into the Elite Eight, but I'm not going to. Final Four requires so much to go right, and you have to be – your floor has to be very, very high. This team's floor still scares me because I do feel like they have raised it as the season has gone on, but I am a little worried about consistency still. Like, is there an egg in this team yet where we go come out and just look disinterested in the game? Because they can't afford to do that anymore this season.
I agree. To me, this is a Sweet 16 team. That's what I say that. I think that's where we will end up. I do think we get there this year because we can score 90 points a game on anyone. And that's going to get you far. We were talking about BYU for a minute. So just a quick sad note, Richie Saunders did tear his ACL, which sucks for BYU. Like, I don't like BYU, but I don't like anyone to have that kind of injury. That blows for them. Like, they actually were really pumped about a national title potentially and that kind of Final Four potential. That's out the door with a loss like that. All right, let's move on to football. Spring football is starting in about a month, just over a month, which is fantastic. So we are going to talk about Jordan Reed at the end of the show, but just to kind of, we're going to do every week, we're going to talk a little bit more about spring preview stuff. So we're going to talk offensive players. So this was Justin's idea, five offensive players we are most excited to watch. So put your answers
in the particular order here, by the way.
Yeah, no particular order. Yeah. Put your answers in the comments. We put it out on Discord this earlier today, got some responses. So I'm actually going to put that up first. So this was the community answering this exact question. So the top five players, if you're listening to this on a podcast, I'll talk through it. So in the vein of the Olympics, I put some gold, silver, and bronze medals under for this. So the top three sort of vote getters were Abu Sama, the running back out of Iowa State, Colton Joseph, of course, and Kevin Haywood, which is a returning guy, but also someone that people are dying to see play in the spring because we didn't see him all last year. Honorable mention. There were a lot of other people, by the way, that got votes in here, but just some their name popped up quite a bit. Carter Smith, Lucas Simmons, Shamar Rigby, Domingo, Malachi Coleman, Eugene Hilton, Grant Steck. So those are the offensive players, Justin, that the community is most excited to see during spring. Let me hear the first name on your list.
Well, he was number two on that list. That's Colton Joseph. I'm very much looking forward to hearing positive things come out of spring about how athletic he looks and hopefully how comfortable he looks in this scheme.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I obviously Colton Joseph's on my list too. I don't really know how you could have this list without Colton Joseph on it because, like, I mean, yeah, that's everything. And number two for me, actually, so my list was actually pretty similar to the list that the community had. I'm going with Kevin Haywood on for my second one. I'm very excited to see him play because we haven't seen him play. And I think that there is a sort of understanding and a sort of confidence within the fan base that we have a left tackle in Kevin Haywood. And I think we do. And I think most people agree that we do. But we don't know, like, we don't know what that knee looks like. We've certainly heard from some great things about his production and has his progression and looks great, but we need to actually see it out there, especially given what we had last year at left tackle and the debacle of fall camp and all that stuff with Davis Heinzen and everything. So I'm very excited to see what Kevin Haywood has. And I'm hoping that he just shows dominance like I think he would have shown last spring had he not gotten hurt. I don't have a lack of confidence in him, but he is one that I'm very eager to watch.
Yeah, he's on my list too. And for me, a big thing is just seeing him go out and enjoy, you know, like have some success. Like he was obviously the first year, you know, dealing with being stuck behind everybody because he was a true freshman. And then last year expecting big things. And right when he feels like he's getting ready to go, then gets the injury where he has a chance to have his breakout. And now I just want to see him get out there, you know, get good, get confident, and hopefully be ready to go going into the fall.
Yeah. What's your next one?
Yeah. My number three
Deuce Adams.
Hmm.
And the reason it's Deuce Adams is after watching Smith last season, I cannot comfortably say at this point in time that I feel confident that he's going to be ready to be the backup this year. So for me, the biggest thing that this team needs is I need to know that this team has a competent backup. I don't care which one of them it is, but the reason why I say Deuce Adams is because he's got an extra year in college football under his belt. And I feel like he's a little more polished than what Carter was this last year. So the question is, who takes this job? Does Adams come in and kind of prove that he's just ready to go and a little further along? Or does Carter come and take the reins here and jump in and take that position? My gut instinct is the guy who seems more polished will be a little bit further along, but we'll see.
I have heard Kevin Brown put it up on the screen. I put up his comment saying that Smith is making a jump. I have heard that Smith is looking really good, and there's a lot of confidence in his ability to potentially be that number two. I still think Deuce Adams starts the season at number two. Interesting enough to think about whether Carter Smith can make that jump. There is a lot of good talk about him, but yes, I agree with you.
I would love it.
He would have been my six or seven on my list because I am interested to see what kind of jump he had, especially after last year when we listen. I admire the effort that he put in, but boy, he struggled throwing the ball, right? And he struggled with that part of the game, but he was a true freshman and there's so much growth from him. And I do hope that he does. And I think whoever that number two guy is, whether it's Smith or Adams, will be the one that stays on the roster and the other one will be gone because Ryan Hopkins is behind him too. So I think like, you know, this, I want it to be Smith, obviously, just because he's our guy. We recruited him. I think there was a lot of upside in his game. He's super athletic, but he's got to be able to throw the ball a little better. And from what I'm hearing, I think he is going to be surprising people in the spring, which is good. My next one is Shamar Rigby. I don't feel like he's talked about enough. I don't know why Rigby isn't talked about enough. I think our lists are very, very similar. I just feel like he could be our number one receiver, and I don't know that he will, but I just like the guy has real experience. The guy brings an athletic ability and a swagger about his game and the route running and the hands. I like him. I like him a lot. He is my favorite receiver that we brought in, and our receiving unit appears to be a bit of it's about the biggest question mark you can have on a team. So I'm saying Shamar Rigby because I want to see what he has and I want to see what this group can actually do.
Yeah, for me, I think I have Rigby on my list too. And the reason is that I trust him most to be productive this year out of the receivers that are in that room. And by productive, I mean, if there's somebody I expect to get 600 yards this year, it's probably Rigby. I just think that he's the one that I expect to be the most consistent coming out of the group, which I will follow up with my fifth guy, Hilton.
Mm-hmm.
And Hilton is on there as I feel like he has a legitimate shot at being the number two receiver. And a lot of it is, number one, he knows this offense already. He's had a year in it. And number two, he is very polished for the type of player he is. He might not have the ceiling of a guy like Kearney or some of the other guys that they brought in, but what he lacks in like top end speed, he is a far more polished route runner than some of the guys and has a very, he's a much better technician than some of the other guys that they have in there right now, where you know that he's going to do the little things right.
Yeah, no surprise. Hilton's on my list as well, because I think that there's a lot of question marks surrounding him. I don't need to really add much to what you said. Like, you're right. He's in the offense. He knows it. I think this is his year to make a real jump. This is Hilton's year to say, you know what? Like, I need to take a step. I need to show what I can do. And whether it's to eventually go somewhere else, go to the SEC and play, fine. Just do it here for a year. I'll lead into my last one. You put a comment on the screen we'll talk about. But mine is Lucas Simmons. As my last guy, because, you know, I think last year, biggest issue on the team, we know it was offensive line. So I have two tackles. I have Simmons and Haywood on my list of five because I'm not really nervous as much this year. I am nervous about the depth of the O-line. I'm not nervous about the starters, but I wanted to see who those are. Like, does Simmons start a right tackle? Is it Mandel? Is Mandel moved back to guard? What do we see in the spring? What do we see in fall? I don't know, but That is a big question mark for me. So I just want to see what Simmons brings. We know what Kevin Haywood can do, or we at least we have a pretty good idea of it. We don't actually know what Simmons is going to bring to this offense and where our new O-line coach, whose name is escaping me in the moment, Mateos, where he sees that Simmons-Mandel discussion. So for me, it's that. And I do want to give an honorable mention. I saw this winning gambler, McGowan. McGowan is now listed as wide receiver, by the way. Yeah. So that's interesting. Jackson McGowan moves over to the wide receiver room.
Excuse me. To me, he's a backup. He's effectively Brooks. Like, he's going to be used in that same way, I would assume.
Yeah.
They want somebody that's got a little more size that can be a little bit more of a blocker. So I will. What I will say is that comment that I just had up there about the Kowicki.
I'm sorry, I took that down.
There's a difference between who you're most excited about and who's most important. And I think we would all agree that the offensive line needs to be significantly better. If we were talking about the most important players going into the spring, it would be heavy on the offensive line and quarterback. Like, those are the play. You cannot have somebody hit in those spots. Like, they have to be better. Receiver, I think you feel like you've got at least a baseline of, we don't know what the ceiling is, but I think that for what we want to do offensively, I think we're like, yeah, they could probably be effective. Offensive line needs to be good. And so Kowicki has to, he's very important. Kevin, Big Kev is very important. Offensive line as a whole needs to be, basically, if this offense is to be solid to good this year, it is going to hinge on the offensive line being somewhere between average to above average for a very young line, which I think is in play with the level of athletes they have there. But this is a lot of guys that have not played snaps together. So it's going to take them some time to gel. And you don't want to be seeing that heading into that first game against Notre Dame.
Doc says, don't be surprised if they slide PJ out to tackle. That's interesting. That could be something.
I think we thought about him. I thought he was a tackle before I saw his position. Like, when I saw his size, I was like, he sounds like a right tackle to me. Like, he was,
I actually
like
kind of felt like he was
something more like that in 340.
I felt like he was more of like a guard that you're going to have like that heavy blocking guard that you need. But, Bill Woj asks, I don't think I'm going to start, but he says, do any of the redshirt freshmen O-linemen start? Let me rephrase this question, though, Justin. Which of the redshirt freshmen sees the field first? So this is like the Watts, Roski class, right? So which one of these guys sees the field first?
Probably Davenport.
Okay.
Davenport or Powell would probably be the two that I look at as most likely. I think there's a non-zero chance that Powell finds his way. I think Powell's at center right now. And if that's the case, I think there's a non-zero chance that he could end up stealing the backup center spot this spring. Like, that's in play. Corey was not good enough this last year for us to look at and say that he's a lock to have that position. He's got to grow in this spring. And if he does not, it's possible he gets passed. And that's a position that they have to find some depth at.
I can tell you this, no podcast is going to get more excited about spring football than this one and Locked On. We're going to talk about it a lot. That's just kind of what we do here. So that's there. All right, let's quickly touch on Justin Jordan Reed, who was wide receivers coach. News came out this weekend that he is now headed to the NFL. He's going to be the assistant quarterbacks coach for the Atlanta Falcons. Give me your sort of thoughts on that.
That's an interesting position for him.
Yes, it is. But that's what he's doing.
I think that I felt like we got, like, that was a hit for that spot. Now, I don't think we got any, there's no way to really evaluate what we saw last season. But I do think that if this particular position, if we have the investment that they've talked about, you need to go get somebody now that has pedigree. Like, get somebody that has experience and get somebody that has some recruiting chops. Like, you need both. You need somebody who's considered good at that spot as a coach and who is also considered capable at bringing in talent, because that to me is an expectation. Like, if you need to go out and spend $600K on a wide receiver coach, then do it.
I saw some things today online, just in boards and Discord and such, that talking about how, like, it's an opportunity because, yes, he was a good recruiter, but Were we confident in his ability as a coach? Like we talked about him as one of the better assistants, mainly because of his recruiting, but the room is in okay shape, certainly not great. Were you comfortable with his coaching? Do you feel like maybe that's why we didn't get a good tune out of these receivers, but also we had no quarterback. So how can we really judge him?
Well, I mean, yeah, that I think there were guys open this last season, and I have to assume that he played at least somewhat of a role. Now, Vinny was pretty polished by the time we got to it this year, but there's a couple of things that you can look at there. Either it was play design, which guys were getting open, or guys were just making strides in terms of their ability to separate. But I don't think any of us thought that the problem was receivers not getting open. Like there were guys running free. Like that was one of our frustrations when we were watching the quarterbacks, because we had nobody to get them the ball on the plays when we did scheme somebody open.
I mean, yes, I watched all the all 22 last season, and yes, there were guys running open. However, we didn't necessarily have guys that were just really adept at getting open either. Like there were some issues there.
But I don't think that we felt like that skill set was there to unlock though either. Like there was nobody we looked at that's like, this guy just hasn't been coached up. Like that's where a guy like this year with Malachi Coleman, like he could have had, that would have been like one of those situations where you could prove yourself as a coach if you unlock him this year and suddenly he turns into a stud, because he's got all the physical tools you can ask for.
Speaking of which, I'm going to put this list back up that the community had. Malachi Coleman was on this list as someone who a lot of people mentioned as a guy they're excited about. Obviously, the three were Sama, Joseph, and Haywood. By the way, the number one guy by far on the community list was Abu Sama, and neither of us mentioned him. Why wasn't he on your list of excited players?
So for me, I just look at it as I have an expectation of what he's going to be, which is going to be a really solid, dependable back this year. And I just don't think he's like, when I think about backs, for me, running backs is somebody going to be flashy and look like they're going to be a absolute freak of nature out there. Like we're spoiled as Wisconsin. Like that unfortunately plays a role when I think about this stuff going into the spring. I've seen too much Jonathan Taylor. I've seen too much Melvin Gordon. I've seen too much of this where you look at it and you're like, oh, they're breaking, runs are broken every day. So when a guy's not doing that, and Sama's probably not going to be a guy that's going to just chop it up and blow up every practice unless the offensive line really has taken a lot of strides. So I kind of have to look at it from the perspective of, like, I expect him to be the guy who's kind of leading that room.
Yeah, that's fair. I expect him to be a chain mover, by the way. He's going to be a guy that's going to get us some first downs. He's a very vital part of this team, and he would have been near the top of my list. But quickly getting back to Jordan Reed, another comment I saw today where it was, why did he leave? Why is he leaving Fickell? Why did Fickell let him leave for an assistant quarterback position? Let me tell you, it's going to the NFL.
Yeah.
You can't
let him leave. I think there's a lot of coaches that want to be in the NFL. Right.
I mean, it's like the dude's going to the NFL, and it's like, well, is it demotion? It's not it. He's going to the NFL. I don't care what he is. Like, he's from the Atlanta, Georgia. He's from Georgia, I believe. And like, I'm pretty sure that's what I saw today. But he wants to go to the NFL. Who doesn't want to go to the NFL? Like, So I've got no issue with that. I do hope that they get one or two guys to replace him. Like, we need a recruiter. We need a guy that can coach. Like, there's no limits on assistants anymore. So let's load up at that position. If you ask most Badger fans what position are they most concerned with going into this year, most people would say wide receiver, just because we don't have a true number one at that position. So even more so a reason that you need to have a guy here that you're comfortable and confident in that can get a tune out of them. It is late in the cycle. It's not exactly a time to be hiring coaches, but you know, this is what you got to do, right? So that's fine.
Also, you're probably going to have to take somebody from somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of hiring coaches, I do want to just mention, we haven't brought it up on this show yet, Jimmy Leonard, now a defensive coordinator in the NFL. Congratulations to my guy, Jimmy. One of my favorite Badgers of all time. He was a Badger when I was there. I think we all would have loved to have him as our defensive coordinator. Many would like to have him as our head coach, given what we've seen. But, I mean, so happy for Jimmy Leonard. I have several Buffalo Bills friends. Right. And I'm like, listen, you're getting a good guy. I cannot wait to see what he does at Buffalo.
It's not even just that. He also stole the edge coach from Minnesota.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did.
Which was the best part of the whole thing. Was that Bobby? Congrats, Jay Belay, on getting a shot in the NFL.
He chose he took April, right?
Yeah, Bobby April. Bobby April is going up, and Jay Vilai he brought in too.
Jay Vilai, good old Badger. Yeah.
Yep.
It's awesome, man. It really is. Like I'm really excited for him. Obviously, the sour taste after everything that happened with the whole Fickell versus him debacle, and then going to Illinois and working for Bielema, and then going to the Broncos. Like, he has long deserved a DC position in the NFL. For the life of me, I don't know what the hell you Packers are doing not hiring him. Like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing?
You want to know what it is? I think that you have a head coach that his ego got bruised by Leonard not taking the job the first time around, so he's holding a grudge. And I kind of look at it from the perspective of your defense sucked last year when you didn't have the best player in the NFL on the defensive side of the football. So pull your head out of your ass and get someone who at a bare minimum sets a standard of extremely competent defensive play, because the Packers defense the last several seasons has not been extremely competent. There are far too many times where I look at it where the mental gaffes and stupidity that I've seen on defense were the reason they lost games.
Yeah. Doc says, do the Bills play the Colts this year? The answer to that question is no, they do not play them. So that's good for me. I don't want to see Jimmy Leonard, but hopefully we see him in the playoffs. But yeah, we all know that my team can't make that. We're going to win 8 or 9 games.
That's a big get for Buffalo, by the way.
It's a great get, dude. Like, I'm telling you, it's such a good hire. I'm so excited for him. I really am. Like, I cannot wait to watch what he does. Like, and we got the Buffalo Badgers. You already got the Pittsburgh Badgers with that entire defensive front being Badgers. So it's great, man. Like, I'm excited about that. Justin, last thoughts before we end the show. Anything you want to touch on? Basketball, football, Olympics, anything we want to touch on that you haven't talked about
yet? I mean, we're a month out or so from spring football, which I think all of us are beyond ready to go at this point in time. So it's getting there, guys. Little by little, we're getting there. We're in the stretch run now for the season for basketball. Let's hope that this team continues to show this level of play, because if they do over these last 6 or 7 games, it bodes really, really well for a deep run in March, which I think we've all needed for a while now. I mean, what, 2017 is the last time we had a real run in the tournament. We could all use some, you know, something to be happy about getting past that first weekend.
Yeah. You made a comment earlier that I think you're right about. Obviously, like, the difference between the Final Four teams that we've had, or even the better teams we've had, is because the floor has been higher. And that is an issue.
They weren't going to lay an egg.
Right. The floor is, it's slowly raising. But the thing I wanted to touch on is Tom Izzo made some comments after the game, and he talked about Greg Gard. He said, he used the phrase, Badgers need to appreciate him and what he's done. And I've been in Greg Gard's corner for the whole time. You guys, that you have all the receipts on this. I've always been in Greg Gard's corner. I'm extremely impressed. Extremely impressed with what he's done with this team. A lot of teams with this many personalities, and with Nick Boyd and Blackwell and everybody, would have not been able to get over the hump that, like, the slump that we were in early in the season, to climb out of that and to now rack up consecutive quad one wins, consecutive top 10 victories. Like, that all matters. And you got to give credit where credit is due. And to me, the ball movement, everything, the cohesion fix, everything you look at that was a problem for this team, and things are getting corrected. It's Greg Gard. And, you know, yes, the players get a lot of the credit, and the coaches get the crap when they lose, like what we're doing on the football side. But you got to give Greg Gard the credit here on the basketball side. I think he's done an incredible job, and he's not going to get enough credit from the Badger fan base, in my opinion, because a lot of people still don't really like him, and that's okay. I do, and I just feel like we need to saddle up and give him some freaking credit, because he's had an incredible last month.
I will go beyond that, and I will say flat out, if all these people that want to complain about him striking out in the state for recruiting for high school kids, if he doesn't do it this year for you people that have the big pocketbooks, he's not getting them because of you. Because when push comes to shove in this, they're not going to put their budget towards those young guys if they don't have it. And right now, they're more focused on getting funding for experienced guys so that they know they have a baseline of talent in there. But there's some really good players this year that the Badgers legitimately have a shot at, mm-hmm, that they're probably not going to lock down, because they're not going to be able to stay in the financial game with this. and that's going to suck. And you guys are going to complain about how good that guy looks at some other school, and it's going to be because you didn't want to open your pocketbook and give Greg Gard $1 million to go pay for one of these guys. And then you'll be like, oh, it would have just been $1 million. And it's like, well, yeah, like it's not, this isn't like football where we're asking for $5 million to put together a roster. Those young guys are looking for $500,000, $600,000, $700,000, and they're worth it because a lot of those guys can come in and be borderline starters year one. And there's some really, really talented guys that you're going to be probably that, like Davis, there's a pretty good chance is not going to show up here. Jaylen Brown, another really gifted player who Badgers could end up, you know, losing ground on because they're not going to be able to offer the same amount that some of the other schools are.
Depending on how this season ends, I think that the athletic department will funnel more funds to the
basketball. I hope so, because he's earned it now.
We wanted the football team to get spending. They did. Appears that way. So good for them. And if there's money left, it needs to go to basketball because they're bringing it in. Greg Gard has done an exceptional job building his roster. Look, we've gotten three. How many teams in the country can say they've got three bona fide portal stars and three back-to-back seasons? AJ Storr, John Tanjay, and Nick Boyd. Mm-hmm. That is, I mean, though we're talking about the best, pretty much the best player on the team the last three seasons has been from the portal. And those are players that a lot of teams would have killed for. I mean, and Greg Gard got the deal done. So kudos to him. We'll be back again next weekend, of course, hopefully talking about two more victories in the basketball. I'll be back for my Regis Corner midweek. Go check that out. And yeah, unbelievable dream week for the Badgers. Let's hope it continues and we talk two more wins next week. Thanks for joining us as always. And on Wisconsin.
On Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy the show, subscribe to our YouTube channel at The Bucky Report or The Bucky Report Podcast from wherever you get your content. Until next time, on Wisconsin.